Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On a Wednesday. So how are you? Middle of the week, first week of March. Hope you're doing well during this beautiful season of Lent. So much to talk about today. And weather-wise, looking good across much of the country. There are some areas that are going to be getting some high winds and whatnot. But overall, much of the central and western U.S. and even the Midwest experiencing above-average temps, with parts of the northern plains seeing high temperatures peaking between 20 to 30 degrees above average. Very, very nice indeed. In some parts, we're having an early spring, which is still just a few weeks away. Well, springing into our program this morning, no pun intended, right after the break, I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with Dan Gaynor. Dan works for the Media Research Center and Newsbusters and has a similar background, was in the news media for a while. And the Media Research Center and Newsbusters does a great job of monitoring the many problems with our secular press and the hypocrisy and double standards in terms of the way they cover issues and politicians, especially the way they cover liberals versus conservatives. And this coverage or lack thereof, which is finally starting to pick up with the controversy swirling around the governor of New York. Wait till you hear what Dan Gaynor has to say, though, about how it began in terms of how they were pressured to cover the story and the hypocrisy and the double standards, especially with CNN. Chris Cuomo the other day saying, well, obviously he can't cover his brother's scandals. Really? But you had him on, I think, a dozen times in a month last year in the middle of the worst situation with Corona when everything was exploding and we were still trying to figure out what in the world was going on. That was fine, and you were cozying up to each other. You had a giant Q-tip and were teasing your brother that this is what's needed, you know, for your large nose, and it was all jokes and you know, all warm and fuzzies. At the same time, we now know that things were just going south and very tragically in terms of the lives of those who were being placed in nursing homes and what happened to so many loved ones of so many people. And so now all of a sudden, there's a conflict of interest for CNN when there was absolutely no conflict of interest. And as a matter of fact, the head of CNN said, well, we have to change things up a bit with our ethics, as if they have any to begin with, because, you know, this is such a unique situation. So when things are going great and your brother is the media darling, that's fine. But when he's on the hot seat and being questioned about a number of things, oh, no, it's a conflict of interest. So a lot to talk about with Dan Gaynor, and that's coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Then another big issue that we're seeing in a lot of these blue states is a complete lack of transparency. And we have one of the biggest issues going on with this in the state of Michigan with our current administration and the governor who has followed the pattern of Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York regarding nursing homes. Last week in the first hour of my program, I had on our local one of our local prosecutors from southeastern Michigan, Peter Lucido, who was formerly a state senator before he ran for the office of prosecutor. He was very involved in trying to get information out and just trying to get some details as to what was going on, not only with the nursing homes, but the failure to use facilities that were set up to the cost of taxpayers and were ignored. For example, of course, in New York, you had the Ship. In Michigan, in southeastern Michigan, we had two major facilities, including the TCF Center, which gained fame and prominence during the election, formerly Cobo Hall. It's a big conference center in downtown Detroit. And another similar location out in the suburbs. And they stood empty. And yet all this money was paid by the taxpayers for these things. So what happened? A lack of transparency. The governor basically just avoids the situation in terms of answering the questions. And now there's another controversy brewing in which the Mackinac Center for Public Policy is trying to get to the bottom of this, and they're going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. What's happening is that there was a health official that was basically given a nice paycheck and a package to step down, and he basically has been gagged. He can't say anything, and he can't be questioned. And at a press conference with the governor the other day, when she was asked about it, she said, I can't violate the confidentiality agreement. How convenient. So there's a definite lack of transparency around these situations where people have died and where we still have all of these arbitrary rules that change 3 or 4 times a day. I'm not kidding. And we are really, really suffering in a number of ways in states like Michigan. And so the Mackinac Center for Public Policy is trying to get to the bottom of it. They are joining with an investigative reporter and are actually filing a lawsuit against the governor. There are some very, very unique FOI restrictions in Michigan that don't allow them to go the normal route of seeking information. That's freedom of information. But more importantly, what they're doing is they're just trying to talk about the importance overall of government and transparency. And this is what we're going to be discussing. The lawsuit has not been officially filed yet, so we can't talk about that per se. But Steve Dealey is going to talk about the need for transparency in our government and what they're trying to do about it in the state of Michigan, which, of course, can be an example for other states across the country as we deal with this changing and situation with COVID. And then last but not least, Joan Lewis joins us from Rome, and she has got a really cool new effort that she's doing on her Facebook page, and I'm so excited because the church that she's highlighting with a little video that she's doing, the church that she's highlighting most recently on her Facebook page is one of my, if not my favorite church next to St. Peter's in Rome, and that is Santa Cecilia, which is in the heart of my favorite Roman neighborhood of Trastevere along the Tiber. So much to talk about with Joan. Also, the Holy Father's historic trip to Iraq, that is big news. We'll get the latest on that and also his audience message today because it's a Wednesday. Busy, busy day, as I told you, much to talk about. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss any of it. I hope you can listen to the whole program. You are listening, by the way, to EWTN. Let's get started and look at the news right now. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops urging Catholics to seek alternatives to coronavirus vaccines produced by Janssen, a company of Johnson & Johnson. They're saying the product raises additional moral concerns through its connection to aborted fetal cells. In a press release issued by Bishop Kevin Rhodes, he said that people should instead take Pfizer or Moderna's vaccines if possible. The statement from Rhodes reading, if one can choose among equally safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines, the vaccine with the least connection to abortion-derived cell lines should be chosen. And on Friday, the Archdiocese of New Orleans releasing a similar statement warning, the latest vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is morally compromised. Human smuggling may have been involved in a deadly crash in a remote California desert near the Mexican border. An SUV packed with 25 people colliding with a semi, killing the driver and 12 passengers. At least 10 who died in yesterday's crash were from Mexico. Texas businesses are being allowed to set their own coronavirus restrictions and mask requirements. Republican Governor Greg Abbott announcing yesterday statewide occupancy requirements, and the face covering mandate will end on March 10th, bringing relief to restaurant owners like John Bunnell.
I'm just so glad that we are starting to see the beginning of the end. I'll never forget March 18th, the day that they said you got to close. It's been one of the hardest things ever.
Governor Abbott's move making Texas the largest state in America to take such a step. Abbott saying county judges can enact their own COVID restrictions if certain hospital levels are met, but no one can be jailed. And the governor of Mississippi, Tate Reeves, also announcing that all county mask mandates will be lifted and businesses can operate at full capacity beginning today.
But we are not going to continue to use the heavy hand of government when it is no longer justified by the reality we see around us. Our hospitalizations have plummeted, and our case numbers have also fallen dramatically. In fact, our case numbers have fallen to the point where no county currently meets the original criteria that we put in place for a mask mandate.
And in Louisiana, Governor Edwards announcing that following almost 6 weeks of improvements in Louisiana's COVID-19 case counts, as well as a sustained decrease in related hospitalizations, Louisiana will move forward to their phase three. The majority of businesses, including restaurants and salons, will be able to move to 75% of their capacity, and indoor gatherings and event centers will be capped at 50% of their capacity, but limited to 250 people. Religious services will no longer have capacity limits. Social distancing is strongly encouraged, though, and masking will still be required. Over in California, the entire varsity baseball team at Burbank, California's John Burroughs High School suspended for violating current coronavirus restrictions. The Burbank Unified School District confirms the team's seniors took photos on the closed campus while side by side and maskless, but this player claims no harm was done.
We took the pictures without our masks on briefly, and then right after the pictures, we social distanced, we put our masks back on, and I thought we did a pretty good job being safe.
However, according to the state of California, the team was in major violation of state and county public health orders by gathering without approval. The team's seniors have been suspended for 2 weeks, while underclassmen can come back next week after they've reviewed all the health guidelines and safety protocols. State lawmakers could vote this week to strip Governor Cuomo of New York of his coronavirus-related emergency powers after reaching a deal on the matter. Here's State Senator Julia Salazar, who says other options also on the table.
We need to support the Attorney General's independent investigation, but that impeachment is another mechanism that we have to hold the governor accountable.
The governor has emergency powers to do things such as issuing mandatory mask wearing and making mandatory comes to COVID and facing allegations of harassment by former Cuomo staffers. Meanwhile, the Working Family Party is joining a growing list of people or organizations calling on Cuomo to resign. A Long Island congressman, Lee Zeldin, is exploring a run for governor of New York. He's a Republican and a strong supporter of former President Trump.
I've received phone calls, texts, emails from supporters, New Yorkers from across the entire state.
Over the weekend, he released a statement accusing Governor Cuomo of lies, cover-ups, bullying, and abuse. Cuomo has said he was going to run for a fourth term, but those comments were made before the current controversies about him and his administration as well. The American Society of Civil Engineers releasing its 2021 report card for America's infrastructure, and the county is not getting good marks. Spokesman Tom Smith says that while there's a country is not getting good marks, while there's been some improvement, the overall grade of C-, nothing to exactly brag about.
No, it's certainly not something to be proud of. We've gone from a D-plus to a C-, and we're still in the range of being mediocre and requiring attention.
According to Smith, without adequate investment in infrastructure in the next two decades, the country could lose $10 trillion in GDP, $2.4 trillion in exports, and some 3 million jobs. Today is World Hearing Day. Kate Carr, president of the Hearing Industries Association, has the facts on why that matters.
Once you lose your hearing, at this point in time, you can't get it back.
It's estimated that more than 30 million Americans suffer from some type of hearing loss, and one reason is that many people often forego hearing aids to help with the issue. It takes on average about 6 years before they actually realize that their hearing is failing. And Target says it plans to spend $4 billion this year on new stores and to remodel existing locations with a focus on quickly processing online orders. A Minneapolis-based retail giant saying it plans to open between 30 to 40 stores each year. It will also add two distribution centers and will experiment with tech-enabled ways to restock shelves. And it's also working, it says, on hubs that sort packages to free up time for employees to pick and pack online orders. And finally, in our news segment on a busy Wednesday morning, 14 minutes past the hour, a Japanese billionaire, as Mark Mayfield tells us, plans to take 8 people with him on a trip around the moon.
Yusaku Maezawa announced on Tuesday he's going to pick 8 members of the public to ride with him on a mission that he's calling Dear Moon. It's expected to fly on SpaceX's Starship rocket in 2023. Maezawa says he'll pay for the entire journey, so the trip around the moon will be a free ride.
So where do we sign up? The story did not mention that. That's what Andrew and I were wondering. So we'll look into that, and we will give you an update. Speaking of updates, stay tuned. More Catholic Connection coming up right after the break. Looking forward to chatting with Dan Gaynor. He's the VP of Business and Culture for the Media Research Center. They've been doing a fantastic job, as always, on keeping an eye on how the media are or aren't covering crises out there and the way they cover it differently depending on one's political persuasion and beliefs. It's very interesting to monitor the coverage of Governor Cuomo. More on that coming up.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith, and Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Archbishop Shep Hugh, the retired Archbishop of Philadelphia, said years ago, and he was a cultural warrior and still is, that we need to know how the media works so they don't work on us. I love that line. It's so, so true, and I can see it in the comments on Facebook. I can see it in the emails how greatly affected and very much negatively sometimes people are by misinformation and out-and-out bias and just lies out there in the press. That's why I'm so grateful for the work of the Media Research Center and Dan Gaynor in particular, Vice President of Business and Culture for the MRC. Dan, my friend, where do we begin with this type of coverage or lack thereof? It's finally starting to kick in and pick up, but it was a long time coming regarding Governor Cuomo. I know you've been monitoring it closely. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Well, good morning, and thank you. Well, I mean, the reason why it's coming out now is it doesn't matter as much. Last year, when the COVID virus hit, the media set up Governor Cuomo as the anti-Trump. They promoted him daily, to the point where he won an Emmy for his daily press briefings, and he left somewhere at November, December, had an 87% approval rating in New York. Now, there were tons of criticisms last year, and the media did everything they could to, if you'll pardon the expression, bury them. And, they didn't do any digging into his personal life. They didn't do any digging into the nursing home scandal. They suppressed the news entirely, and for one really obvious reason. He was, I guess you could call him, their bullpen guy. It was widely talked about in Washington that Biden might not be able to make it to the election, that they might have to pull him out. And so the media built up Cuomo as a backup. But now they don't need him anymore. In fact, they don't want him anymore. And so suddenly, now we can write stories about him. Now we can make fun of him on Saturday Night Live. The other night on SNL, they had a segment where they had a game show with three prominent governors on the game show. And every one of them would be a potential 2024 Democratic contender. And every one of them was made fun of. I wonder why that is. Oh, let's see. Maybe the pro-Kamala forces are already trying to clear the race for 2024.
But here's the thing, and isn't it still, though, I think, important for this story to be covered, because we are eventually learning more, and there's more pressure now for him to resign, and the fact that this is being exposed. Of course, Janice Dean, I think, on Fox News has done a stellar job of exposing what happened with her mother and father-in-law. Such a tragic story. And there are all kinds of groups. Last week, I interviewed a woman who started the group Voices for Seniors. And as Catholics and Christians in general, we are concerned about pro-life from womb to tomb. So while it is just, I think, just so hypocritical and double standards abound, I am glad that this is being exposed finally, because there's a lot of people now, and his model, Dan, as you well know, if you want to call it even a model, was used by a number of blue states, including my own Michigan, in the way the situations were handled in nursing homes. So this is forcing, at least it is in our state, our governor, who was like Cuomo in terms of the media darling, is finally getting questioned about her policies.
Yeah, I agree completely. Here's the problem. What are they focusing on nationally? They're focusing on sexual harassment. And so what the press is doing is suppressing the bigger story, the vastly bigger story of 15,000 dead in New York, you know, nursing homes, and using a pretty standard playbook for the left of that, you did something that is offensive to them. And so you're just saying offensive to them. Well, that's it for you. In fact, I mean, it wasn't that his actions resulted in 15,000 dead that got a Democratic congresswoman to say he should resign. It was the sexual harassment.
The sexual harassment, right, yeah. That is. There's an, as bad as sexual harassment is, it isn't rank up there with the death of 15,000 people. I get it. It's still very serious allegations that need to be considered. I do say, however, that this is an opportunity for those of us who are concerned about all of these issues pertaining to the dignity of the human person to continue to put pressure on the media to say, okay, you're covering this, but you also have to cover this. Because, you know, my friend Father Frank Bavone from Priest for Love says you can't practice vice virtuously. So, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And the other frustrating thing that we're seeing now, too, I think that the media need to ask questions about, which they're not, is all these politicians say they knew what a bully he was. Okay, so where were you the last 10, 15 years? All of a sudden you're saying that he's a big bully, so you knew about this abuse or alleged abuse and stood by and said zip, zero, nada?
Yeah, well, that's because he was a very effective bully. And look, you know, there's a long history that Lyndon Johnson was famously abusive to people, particularly people who worked around him, people in the press. It's not new to have politicians that way, but we live in an era where we expect more transparency. And he also, I mean, the way he was treating women was going on. This is not new. The photo that surfaced like 2 days ago,
right,
where he has his hands on the face of this young woman, and she has an expression that I'm sure women in this audience right now have all felt when some guy creeped on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a, you know, any man, not any guy, but any man, grown up man who's, you know, pursuing a woman and she reacts that way to you, you back off. I mean, you know, but he didn't, clearly. And, you know, yes, it's not surprising to me that a person who killed 15,000 people is also a creep. This is not shocking to me.
Well, also, he is the same governor who celebrated when the whole abortion issue, we know, 2 years ago, right when they lit up the tower building, the replacement for the Twin Towers. I forget the name of the building now. It escapes me. But how they lit the city up in pink, practically, celebrating Planned Parenthood and celebrating extreme abortion measures.
Well, yeah, extreme, you know, killing babies after they're born. I mean, that's, and of course, watching the press suppress that as well. So here's my real concern about the media coverage, is they're allowing his mistreatment of women to, you know, hide a far bigger story. And in that, it's a scandal for the press. Because remember, when he was out there doing these daily briefings, he was also going on CNN being interviewed by his brother. Now, suddenly, CNN's, you know, Chris Cuomo, his brother, comes out there, anchor at CNN, says, oh, well, of course I can't interview my brother about this.
His thing was, obviously I can't interview my brother. Now, that was the next question I had for you. And you and I, as former secular media people, we were always hearing, at least in the days when we still did do balanced reporting, conflict of interest, right? We had to be very aware of that, and we had things in our contract that outlined the details in terms of conflicts of interest, possible conflicts of interest. And so last year, he had his brother on. I think the numbers that you guys had was, what, up to a dozen times almost in 6 weeks. And basically, his boss said, well, we have to make exceptions to this rule of ethics because it's such a unique situation with COVID. And his brother was, as you said, the media darling last summer. Now, fast forward a year later, and he is on the hot seat for a number of reasons. And now, all of a sudden, obviously, he can't interview his brother. Really? Yeah, does he think we're stupid?
It's not just that he had his brother on. It was that they, they yucked it up like it was an entertainment program.
While people were dying.
Right. He brought out, so he had this 3-foot-long swab. And he's like, oh, is this what they use to swab your nose? Because, of course, Cuomo's got a big nose, and so do I, so I'm not being critical. I'm just saying that they did this. Now, you know that Chris Cuomo didn't mock that up himself. That means someone at CNN did this. This was approved at the producer level. The, you know, the people behind the scenes were okay with this.
Right.
And that's just appalling.
Yes, it is. It is all appalling. But in the meantime, we need to keep pressure on the media, Media Research Center. Dan, what's the website? Because you keep us updated and give us great ideas for engaging the press.
Newsbusters.org.
Thanks, my friend. Stay strong and keep bringing us the stories that nobody else will cover. Dan Gaynor, Vice President of Business and Culture for the MRC, Newsbusters.org. Check it out. Speaking of transparency, we'll talk about what's happening in Michigan up next.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
The arguments raging in today's society as to the state of marriage and who may enter into it shouldn't cause us to forget its permanent characteristics. According to the Catholic Catechism, the matrimonial covenant has two main purposes, the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of offspring. Our Lord Jesus raised this covenant to the dignity of a sacrament. The Catechism also reminds us of the indisputable fact that marriage is not a purely human institution. God Himself is the author of marriage, and only God, not man, can change its common and permanent characteristics. It began with the creation of man and woman in the image and likeness of God, who is love. Thus, their mutual and unfailing love becomes an image of the absolute and unfailing love with which God loves man. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Getting at the truth, though, in the current state of our media and public affairs is sometimes difficult. That's why it takes courageous people to speak up, including the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, well known in the state of Michigan and Midwest for really emphasizing the importance of honesty in government, and they do a lot of great things. Steve Dudley is on the phone with us, and Steve, I know that you're joining in. You're involved in a number of lawsuits related to transparency issues, but the most recent news broke earlier this week that you're joining with an investigative reporter, a Pulitzer Prize winner, Charlie LaDuff, who is really asking the questions that the reporters out there should be asking, not only of Governor Whitmer, but also of Governor Cuomo regarding what happened with the nursing homes. You have not filed that lawsuit yet, correct? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Yes, that's correct. We are partnering with Charlie LaDuff. And we have not yet filed the lawsuit. Where we are with that is essentially we are formulating the best legal theories that we can to make sure that we have the highest chance of success.
So give us an idea in terms of what you do at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy for our listeners that may not be familiar with your work.
Thank you. Yes. So the Mackinac Center for Public Policy is a think tank here in Michigan. What we do is we advance good free market policies and try and promote the best public policy we can throughout the state to help ensure that citizens have the best chance possible to flourish in their daily lives.
There have been a number of questions, and we were chatting during the break about this issue of transparency in Michigan with COVID, or more particularly lack thereof. What are you working on in addition to that lawsuit that you're pulling together with Charlie LaDuff to help people get some answers on what's been happening?
Certainly. So as you mentioned, we obviously have Charlie's case. We've also filed a few requests on our own behalf trying to get access to data from the University of Michigan, who the governor has cited as one of her chief partners in developing a COVID response plan. And what we've seen is largely a lack of transparency, not just from the state, but from universities, from cities, all throughout Michigan. I think we have five or six active cases right now. We have a few more coming in the near future, where it's just become unreasonably difficult for an average person or even for news media to be able to gain access to information that allows the public to understand the inner workings of their government.
Last week, there were some testimonies that took place, and I went online and watched the House Oversight Committee and heard some very chilling testimony from residents who have been greatly impacted by the rules for COVID-19 in nursing homes in Michigan. And they want answers, and they haven't gotten those answers. What is the process now? Are you working with the public and helping them get some answers on the COVID situation, Steve?
Yes, not necessarily directly general members of the public. We'd certainly be happy to, but we're working with Charlie for that purpose. And really what we're trying to get access to is just the underlying data. Here in Michigan, the state publishes COVID fatality numbers. They have begun publishing numbers related to nursing home deaths, but it's been practically impossible to gain access to the records that the state uses in compiling that data. So that's what we're really interested in seeing. It's a matter of being able to review what the state is reviewing, to double check the work, to see if there's anything that's particularly concerning, and to address it that way. But without access to those records, it's just impossible to really do that.
And we're talking with Steve Dully from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan. Have any of the stories that have now reached a national level in terms of, for example, the governor and the former health official and the agreement that was signed with him, Mr. Gordon, that's making big headlines, there seems to be more pressure now being put on Governor Whitmer. Is that helping in terms of maybe opening up lines, more lines of communication, or giving you more access? The media coverage that's finally coming about, it hasn't been there for a long time, with many of the leaders, is that helping at all?
I think it's too early to say. It's certainly welcome to see that coverage. I think the questions that being asked are questions that should be asked, and that there should be more dialogue, more transparency, and a greater understanding of what's going on. Given the recent revelations relating to Dr. Gordon and his severance agreement, I have yet to see what effect that's had on transparency, but with the number of requests we file, I expect to know whether that's made any difference at all in the relatively near future.
It really causes the eyebrows to be raised and more questions, because there's a confidentiality agreement. And when the governor was asked about it yesterday, she said she can't comment because it's a confidentiality agreement. And I was interviewing the Macomb County prosecutor last week, Peter Lucido, and he was wondering, well, why did he leave? He's a health official. People need to know he left suddenly. What's going on? So people need those answers. We have a right to know. These are people that are supposed to be serving us.
I can't disagree with any of those points. As an attorney, you know, I am familiar with confidentiality agreements. I have seen them before in rare instances. And while the governor may not be able to comment on it, nor may Dr. Gordon, the underlying emails that have occurred at MDHHS, I believe would be subject to FOIA. And I'm vaguely aware of a number of outlets that are already pursuing that angle. So it'll be interesting to see whether the state, and particularly the Department of Health and Human Services for Michigan, releases emails between the governor's office and DHS so that we have a better understanding of maybe what was going on leading up to the decision to execute those agreements.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of FOIA, Freedom of Information requests, we have some different laws that are very unique to Michigan and I think one other state. They can FOIA, for example, as you said, the Department of Health and Human Services, but they can't FOIA the governor's office or state lawmakers, correct?
That's correct, and that's something that we've had difficulties with throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously, as you're aware, the Empire Center for Public Policy out of New York has done really excellent work there at getting data underlying Governor Cuomo's response. It's been significantly harder here in Michigan. We're one of two states that exempts the governor's office and one of eight states that exempts the legislature from FOIA. And we're the only state in the nation that exempts the governor's office via the statute itself. Massachusetts does it, but that's through a court decision. So that has made it exceedingly difficult for any entity in Michigan to really gain access to information that is housed exclusively within the governor's branch.
Are there efforts underway to try to take that up again, to change that?
That's been debated for a number of years. To the best of my recollection, there was a bill that was debated last session on opening the governor's office to FOIA. My understanding is that the governor wanted to make sure that both the executive and the legislature were opened to FOIA, and that that seemed to be a particular sticking point. Whether that gets reintroduced or not, I'm not sure. There's there's a group here in Michigan that has now announced a ballot initiative to do so. That may be what it takes. Given the politics of the situation, it may be up to the citizens of Michigan to have to institute that new rule.
Steve, appreciate your work. Steve Dulley with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And just one quick question as we wrap up. Sometimes we as the average citizens feel helpless and hopeless that we have no say in the matter. What would you encourage us to do when we're frustrated with things like we're seeing right now?
Certainly. That feeling is not unique to even average citizens. I certainly get that feeling from time to time as well. I would say don't forget that even here where the transparency law is difficult, there are avenues for help.
And let me give your website because we're almost out of time, mackinaw.org, and we'll be right back. Sorry, Steve, we'll have you on again. Thanks so much.
You and I must care enough for our brother, our families, our city, our nation, and our world, to pray for the salvation of souls.
Step away from the turmoil of the day. Spend time with Mother Angelica and the Lord. In A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica, you'll find lessons that touch every aspect of our relationship with God and our neighbor. Filled with Mother's trademark wisdom and love, these meditations and prayers will help you turn to Jesus in your everyday life and embrace the power of healing, joy, forgiveness, Our Lady, and so much more. Discover how spending more time with Christ can change the world around you. A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica, the latest release from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection, heading over to Roma, the Eternal City, where we find our dear sister and wonderful correspondent, Joan Lewis, who checks in with us every week on Wednesdays, a very important day every week because of the general audience, and this week in particular because of the trip and the historic effort of the Pope to go to Iraq. What's the latest, first of all, good morning, on that trip? Because there were some concerns, some COVID-related concerns with a member of the staff that contracted COVID.
Well, yes, a member of the staff in at the nunciature, the nuncio, in fact, to Iraq. And they're usually the person that is with the Holy Father every single waking minute of a visit. And the Holy Father usually on a trip, whether it's, you know, one country or 10 countries, he stays in the nunciature as his residence, you know, during a trip. So I'm not really sure how all those things are working out, except I do know the nuncio is supposed to be, he's quarantining, but out, not in the nunciature. Normally, he'd reside there, have his bedroom and office, et cetera. So he's quarantining elsewhere, and I'm sure that the staff has all been checked out, even though throughout Iraq, their vaccination program has not really, you know, jumped into any kind of important gear at this point. So for the people who are scheduled to see the Holy Father, if they're actually going to be in his presence, et cetera, for 5 minutes or 5 hours, then I'm sure they will all have been checked out. The only thing that will be tough to check out for, as far as COVID goes, will be the mass in Erbil in the stadium there with 10,000 people. I think it's a stadium that can take 30 or so thousand people, and they're quote unquote only inviting, you know, 10,000. So that's the only time they expect a big group. I mean, he'll be traveling in what I'm imagining is an armored car, a closed vehicle, as he goes from one part, for example, of Baghdad to another. Then when he goes by helicopter to Ur, to southern Iraq, to Nasiriyah and so forth, then that will be, and then even actually Kurdistan, which is northern Iraq. When he travels there, that will be by helicopter. So at this point, I mean, in my mind, COVID, for me, Joan, is not the number one issue. I can see where everyone would have concerns. But my concern, especially after the bombing overnight and this morning of a military base in Iraq, that would be my concern. You know, did that happen today for a specific reason not related to the papal trip, or is that someone, apparently Iran-instigated bombs is what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. I'm not declaring that as a statement. I'm just saying that's what I've read. You know, is this bombing some kind of a message relative to the papal trip, or does it have nothing to do with the papal trip? So the security precautions, I mean, if I was running this whole thing and I'm in Rome or I'm in Baghdad, I'm in Iraq, Teresa, I just have to tell you my number one thing would be the security people, and the Pope would be pretty much shielded except for that mass, that open-air mass. But I'm sure they're going to have drones in the sky. They're going to have a huge number of Iraqi military and security officials in addition to, you know, anything else that may have been planned with the Vatican. So it's a shame. Well, any trip, when you think about it, has been, just go Google papal trips in the last 20 or so years, and you're always going to see a lot of emphasis, no matter who the Pope is, given to the security aspect of the trip. But obviously, an Iraq is going to be 10 times more concerning than a visit to, you know, Paris or Des Moines. So we certainly have to pray for that. And the Pope asked for prayers today at his at the general audience at the very end, where he spoke about how sad, upset he was about what's happening in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. And then he also asked for prayers for Iraq. And I know the people there are so excited, because, I mean, I know your major players, as I said to you in an email. And I spent several weeks in Iraq. I have visited all six dioceses in Kurdistan, and I've kept up for the last years with everything that's been happening there. So I know how overjoyed the people are. Oh, my gosh, and Teresa, they're such wonderful, faithful
and faithful people. You know, here in southeastern Michigan, I'm sure you're aware that we have one of the largest Chaldean populations is San Diego and Metro Detroit, and an incredible Chaldean community here in southeastern Michigan. Very proud of them, including our own Vanessa Denha Garmo.
Oh, I know, and we've often wanted to spend time, Vanessa and I, on the phone just talking about that. But one thing I will publish today with, you know, a little bit of news about Iraq is a link to a website that's in English from Ankawa. Ankawa is a town out, I guess you'd say a suburb almost of Erbil in northern Iraq, and it's predominantly Christian and Catholic, and I spent a lot of time in with nuns and priests and schools and a lot of things when I was in Ankawa, is where the seminary was that I was staying, the Chaldean seminary, and so I even learned a lot at that time, as you said, during my visit, about the two biggest communities in America being Detroit and San Diego for the Chaldean churches. So,
right.
But just amazing people, so full of faith. And I think what struck me on my visit, on my visits, was the fact that these people have every reason to almost feel hopeless. The region they live in being such a minority, the threats that came, of course, ISIS, the presence of ISIS for so many years, the destruction. Teresa, when I was there, at a certain point, I traveled in the diocese of Mosul, but they would not take me to the city of Mosul for the danger, even though there were American troops, you know, on the ground there along with Iraqi troops. But so that type of thing has changed. The man I knew was the first Archbishop of Mosul, Amel Nona. He is now actually in Oceania, but I don't imagine he's coming back for this. He has his successor in Mosul. But at one point, six of the seven churches, Catholic churches in Mosul, were closed. Only the cathedral was open, so that if people felt like, you know, they'd all wanted to go to Mass, but if you were Christian, you had a bullseye on your, you know, a target
right.
Marked on your back. So a lot of people, it just didn't seem to make sense. It would be a suicide mission to go to church, so they stayed home. But one of my favorite stories when I was there, and this is still true today in so many respects, was how wonderful and helpful Muslims were to Christians. You know, you'd have a Muslim neighbor. You'd have two Muslim neighbors wherever you lived. And it could have been in the Baghdad area, could have been in northern Iraq. But it was the Muslims who would go out and go grocery shopping or shopping for medicine or whatever the Christian family needed. This is what happened in the absolute worst days of the presence of ISIS. And one thing which I don't know if it is still true today, but it broke my heart when I was there, the Iraqis have to carry around an ID. It's about the size of a playing card, a U.S. deck of playing cards. Obviously all in Arabic. On both sides of the card, which would be plastified, had information about the person. And on one of the sides, in the upper right-hand corner, it said, Christian or Muslim, you had to declare your faith. And one day I was just about to do a live radio show in Iraq with EWTN. And minutes before, a call came in from Archbishop Nona, Amel Nona, and he reported that two students who had been leaving the university, and apparently it's one of the finest in all of Iraq, two students had been stopped by a man in uniform and asked for their ID. And he saw that on both IDs it was written Christian, and he pulled out his gun and he shot them. I'm trying to tell this story on the radio without bursting into tears, to be honest with you, because it just so struck me. I heard this moments ago from the bishop of the town, And so I don't know, they were talking about phasing out those IDs, and quite honestly, I'll have to email some friends of mine because I don't know if they still have those. It did turn out that the man in uniform, it was a stolen uniform. It was not an Iraqi policeman, you know, but that's how these people lived. And you and I, and everyone listening to us and everyone we know, we've never been threatened. I mean physically threatened because of who we are, because of being Catholic Christians. So we've never had to live our faith out, leaving our home, walking out that front door to go to church, wondering if we're going to come back.
Right. There's all kinds of white martyrdom going on in the U.S. now, and it's worse than it has been.
Yes.
But the red martyrdom and those brothers and sisters in Iraq, it's been amazing the challenges they've faced and the stories and the courage to stand up for their faith and what they've gone through and continue to go through. John, I want to move on to one thing to let people know regarding some beautiful things you're doing on your Facebook page featuring many churches in Rome. And you just featured in a video one of my favorite places, that Santa Cecilia in my favorite neighborhood of Rome, Trastevere. Tell us about that real quick. You have about 3 minutes left.
Oh, sure. No, what I've been doing is trying to feature every day the church in Rome that is that day's Lenten station church. I posted the whole history and story about station churches in Rome, and then each day I try to post information on the church. Well, yesterday there seemed to be a conflict between two different saints, and I chose the church of San Bartolomeo, St. Bartholomew, and posted my Jones Rome video on the church. So you not only hear me tell the story, but you see images of the inside of the church. And today I am actually about to post that on Facebook and my blog. And today is, yes, St. Cecilia, just an amazing, beautiful story. The church just kind of, I think we both get goosebumps just thinking about that beautiful church. And Trastevere one, and I explain in the video exactly what Trastevere is. It's one of the oldest parts of Rome, probably after the Roman Forum. And you can have families that have 10-plus generations of living in that same area of Rome. So, and then, of course, all the beautiful churches, but St. Cecilia, obviously, the patroness of music.
So, right. Well, just when you walk in that courtyard in the front of the church, then you have you know, the whole underground section that you can tour, and it's just, it's a fascinating place, and it's one of those things that's tucked in there. It's kind of really out of the it really is off the beaten path, because in the section that you go to, there's really nothing else. There's, you're right in the heart of this neighborhood, and there's some great restaurants right down the street. There's D'Enzo's, and there's the one right next to the church. I can't remember the name of it, but the neighborhood is just beautiful, and it's just so old Rome, and that's the place where you just get the sense of, if you want to, and I tell people this all the time, if you want to really get the experience of Rome, go to Trastevere, because you're away from, you're in the big city, but you feel like you're in a whole different world in Trastevere.
Oh, Teresa, I think you and I agree on one thing. There's something about Trastevere that makes you not want to rush.
Right.
You don't find yourself hurrying down a sidewalk to get someplace. You're going to walk a little slower in the first place because it's all cobblestones, and it can be tough to maneuver at times. But you just kind of want to linger and look at some of the buildings and fountains and
flower pots and
Look where they have a restaurant. Look where they have a church. It's just that kind of a neighborhood. And
well, we appreciate all your creativity in bringing these places to us, and hopefully you and I, God willing, this year, we'll be doing that again together. We'll have more information as things, God willing, begin to open up, and look forward to hearing your reports next week on the Holy Father's trip to Iraq. We pray for safe travel for him and a powerful experience for our brothers and sisters in that country. Jones Rome every Wednesday right here on Catholic Connection. Don't forget to check out her great Facebook page and all the great writing and videos that she does, including the latest on Santa Cecilia in Trastevere. We'll be right back.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins.
More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com. 60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights. Beginning with the right to life, the government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. If you're facing uncertainty with your current health care plan, now is the time to join CMF Curo. You can join any time during the year, and CMF Curo offers flexible Catholic health care solutions for individuals, families, and employers. CMF Curo is your personal health care advocate. Contact them today at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
Wow, this hour just flew by. Time flies when you have great guests and a wonderful producer who pulls it all together. And speaking of which, he's pulled together two great guests for tomorrow. Actually, three for tomorrow. Father Chris Allar, of course, joins us. He returns to Catholic Connection. He is from the Fathers of Mercy in Stockbridge. We'll be talking all about that message of divine mercy. And what can we do to evangelize in our own way? We'll get some advice from three amazing Catholic dads. They're making waves on the internet. We'll tell you all about the Rome Boys tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.